I think it would be really hard to be joyful if you're not breathing properly. I know that sounds crazy, but from what I've learned, how we breathe is as important as what we're eating or how much we're sleeping or how much we're exercising. I really, truly believe that. And I've seen people utterly transformed by simply changing their breathing habits.
Breathing. It's free, it's simple, you have to do it to live, and yet how we breathe can affect our health in so many ways. Not just our mental health, but our physical health, even our bone structure. Today's guest, James Nestor, is a longtime friend who I met after reading a book he wrote about freediving called Deep, which he learned a lot about breathing doing. Deep became a New York Times bestseller, and it led James to diving even deeper into breathwork. He got so into it, he spent the last 3 years researching different ways of breathing for his latest book, which just hit shelves, called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. So today, we're talking about all the weird stuff James did to research this book, including sleeping with tape on his mouth, which I try, by the way, as well as what he learned about how our ancestors used to breathe, how a tribe of Native Americans used a breathing technique to reach maximum health, why humming can be impactful, how our breath muscles have similar tissue to our sex organs, yeah, as well as all the ways you can breathe better to have more joy in your lives right now. Just note, with all these podcasts, this is not medical advice. I'm just a podcaster. This is just for information purposes only. I recorded this show with James in quarantine, and ironically, if I sound a little nasally, well, I had a little sinus thing going on, but c'est la vie. You can stay until the end and hear how I use James's advice in breathwork to help clear it up. Enjoy the show. James Nestor, welcome as one of the first guests to Vitamin Joy. So excited to have you.
It's an honor. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we've known each other for a long time, and your book is awesome. I read the first chapter, and I think it would be good to just start, like, what's the best way anyone listening to this podcast can breathe better now?
The best way to breathe is to breathe slowly and to breathe less. And that seems so simplistic that a lot of people think there won't be too many benefits of breathing that way. But you will be so amazed by how quickly you're breathing, how much you're over-breathing, and how by just changing that, you can change your body, your mind, and to a certain extent, even your skeletal structure, as insane as that sounds. We'll get into that in a little bit. So breathe slowly, breathe less, breathe through the nose. That's the holy triumvirate. And then everything gets more detailed down from there.
So slow. So I read, in 5 seconds, out 5 seconds.
That's it. That's the most simplistic way, the easiest practice to adopt. And by just breathing that way, all of the systems in the body enter a state of coherence where everything is working at peak efficiency. You're able to purge all the toxins, all the waste gases from your lungs. You're able to absorb more oxygen, increase circulation, calm the mind, all that good stuff. So even when you're working out, to breathe slowly and with longer breaths will have a huge impact on your level of endurance and your recovery.
So basically, if you don't listen to the rest of this podcast, at least start breathing slowly through your nose. We're going to talk about why and how, and this is just so exciting. And ironically, I have a little bit of congestion, so I can be a guinea pig. I've had a sinus infection thing for a while now, but I'm recovering, and I've been using some of your techniques to clear my nose, and it works. So let's talk about your research. As part of your research, you did some weird shit to study this book. You want to tell us a little bit about some of the things you did?
So the book actually starts looking at ancient human skulls. And what I discovered, which really blew my mind, was that our heads, our noses, our mouths have all drastically changed over the last few hundred years. If you think about crooked teeth, for instance, this is a malady that only modern humans have. If you look at an old skull that's 1,000 years old or 10,000 years old or 100,000 years old, all these people had perfectly straight teeth.
But I thought that was because we eat French fries and, like, it's the diet.
Well, it has a lot to do with the diet, but what happens, like, and so this brought up a question. Well, why do we have crooked teeth? Why did this just suddenly happen to us? Because our mouths have shrunk so much that teeth have nowhere to grow in straight. Teeth will grow in straight if you let them, but the mouth is so small. So what happens? You've got a small mouth, can't fit all your teeth. You get teeth pulled, wisdom teeth out. Small mouth also means less room to breathe. Less room to breathe equals breathing problems, equals, for instance, sinusitis. It equals sleep apnea. It equals snoring. So, I had never realized this, but humans are the worst breathers in the animal kingdom. And that is why we have so many of these chronic problems.
Wow. So one of these ancient things you studied, you actually found this tribe of Native Americans that breathed only through their nose. I found this to be fascinating. You said even the moms, when the babies were little, if they saw their kids breathing, they closed their mouths, and this tribe grew to be incredibly tall. Talk to me about this.
Well, what's really fascinating about this is it wasn't just one tribe. It was every single Native American tribe that this researcher, George Catlin, went and lived with.
Wow.
So in the 1830s, this guy was a portrait painter in Philadelphia, painted like governors and other people, but he was not interested in pretentious, polite society. He wanted to see nature the way it really was and wanted to see humans the way they were supposed to be. So he packed a gun, some canvases, some paints, and traveled more miles than Lewis and Clark to live with 50 different Native American tribes. And what he found throughout every single one of these tribes. Now, this was pre-contact, right? This is before these tribes were given smallpox blankets or booze or guns or any of that crap. So he found that they all shared in the same secret medicine, and the medicine was breathing. And they were adamant about only breathing through the nose all the time. And it started at infancy, and it went all the way up to old age. And he found that there was no coincidence that they all had these extremely powerful, strong jaws. They had very little, if any, chronic health problems. There's no asthma that he saw, no allergies, none of the other chronic problems that we have. And he attributed this to their healthy breathing and their natural living lifestyle.
That is so wild. So why scientifically is nose breathing so much more superior than mouth breathing? And maybe you can tell us your experiment, because you tested this firsthand.
Sure. So nasal breathing, when you take in air through the nose, you are heating the air, you are moistening it, you are filtering out particles, particulate, bacteria, you name it. You are also increasing your nitric oxide about sixfold. Nitric oxide is this amazing molecule that controls so many aspects of our health, from circulation to oxygenation and on and on. And it turns out that the drug Viagra, the way it works is that it releases nitric oxide into the bloodstream, which increases circulation, you know where, and everywhere else. So those are just, that's the Cliff Notes version of why nasal breathing is so important. But
so who needs Viagra? Just breathe through your nose. Awesome. Love it. We just saved a lot of people a lot of money and side effects.
There you go. I made some couples very happy with that. That advice is free. So, breathing through the nose is not something that a lot of people consider is very important to health. If you've got half the population that is mouth breathing, about a quarter of the population that has chronic sinusitis, so it's breathing through the mouth some of the time, another 50% is snoring, which means you're breathing through the mouth. That means they're not breathing through the nose enough. And the key to breathing health, and actually to all health, is to start by breathing through the nose. It's just essential. So, after talking to so many doctors and pulmonologists, and some of them are like, if you can't breathe through your nose, just breathe through your mouth, the body figures it out. I thought, well, why don't we test this? So I met a pretty interesting character, Jayankar Nayak at Stanford. He's the chief of rhinology. And I said, why don't we do an experiment where I will spend, me and another guy will spend 10 days with silicone plugs up our noses, breathing only through our mouths. Then we'll spend 10 days breathing only through our noses. And we'll do compare data sets of pulmonary functions, you know, hormone markers and all that. So the result of this was that within a single day of plugging my nose, I started snoring. Hadn't snored before. Within a few days, I was snoring half the night, 4 hours a night. I got sleep apnea. I got anxiety. I was a freaking mess. It was awful. And then the day I removed those plugs and started breathing through my nose again, all of my snoring went away entirely. All of my sleep apnea went away entirely. My blood pressure went down 20 points. You know, there's this whole, all of these data sheets that I'm happy to share with whomever. But just breathing through the nose can have that effect. And this is something you very rarely hear about from doctors or anyone else. So do that, good people. Breathe through the nose, breathe slowly, breathe less, and don't ever plug your nose with silicone. It was freaking god-awful. Don't do it.
But you also taped your mouth shut. And I met a friend who had read your book early, and she taped her mouth shut. And she said she stopped snoring because of it. And so, one, where do you get mouth tape? Two, audience, don't try this at home. This is a podcast for information purposes only. But if you do want to try it, where do you get it? And, like, how does that work?
So, I thought that this was pretty sketchy because I said, you know, it's easy to breathe through your mouth at night. All you have to do is plug your nose. But it's harder to just breathe through your nose. And at night, I'm a mouth breather just like most other people. So I discovered this thing called sleep tape, where it's a practice where you put a little piece of tape and you put it over your lips at night. So it enables you to breathe through your nose so you don't reflexively open your mouth. And it sounded pretty sketchy to me until I heard about it from a Stanford researcher who worked with Nayak, and she uses it with all of her patients. She used it herself to clear up her own snoring and her own chronic sinus problems. So I know this sounds, people are like, well, you know, what if I lose the ability to breathe? What if there's an emergency? You know, what if I vomit? I'm going to choke on my vomit. All of that is complete BS. You need a teeny piece of surgical tape. I use this stuff called 3M DuraPore tape. And no, 3M isn't paying me for anything. It doesn't have any chemically scent. And it's very light. You don't want very sticky tape. And you just place a teeny stamp size piece at the center of your mouth. That's it. If you need to cough, or even if you need to talk, you can talk out of the sides of your mouth. What you're doing is you're training yourself to keep your mouth shut. And there were devices in the 30s and in the 20s that were used to strap people's jaws shut to stop them from snoring. And for a lot of people with mild or moderate snoring, this hack alone will help stop you from snoring.
Thank you for that, because I'm definitely going to go try it. And I have noticed when I force myself to close my mouth, my breathing through my nose gets easier, even if it's totally clogged. Like you, your body just, maybe it's the nitrous oxide, I don't know, but you eventually have to clear that. Sort of like, I'm sure everybody has noticed at one point that one side of their nose might be more clear than the other. What's up with that? Mm-hmm. What's up with it?
Well, what's up with that? So you're right. The nose, just like any other muscle or organ or whatever, it applies to the use it or lose it, you know, tagline. So the less you use your nose, the more closed it's going to stay. And this Stanford researcher found that people who had laryngectomies, who had holes drilled in their throats, actually, within 2 months to 2 years, their noses clogged up entirely, 100% tissue filled in, all that. So you want to start breathing through your nose as often as possible. Even if it feels stuffed, keep doing it. Keep doing it. And chances are, if you've got a mild problem, it will clear up. That doesn't work for everyone, but it works for a lot of people. So yeah, so different sides of the nose. This is where the nose turns into this mystical, crazy thing. So your nose will reflexively open and close different nostrils at different times of the day. And yogis believe that all humans would share these same patterns. It was a way that we could connect ourselves with the cosmos and with the earth and with each other. Our nostrils would open. Inside of the nostrils, all those tissues would open reflexively, like flowers in the morning or close during the full moon. So what researchers discovered a little more recently, about 100 years ago, is that the body does this, and that airflow through different nostrils will stimulate different functions. So if we're just breathing through our right nostril, our circulation is going to increase, our body is going to heat up, we're going to be able to digest food better. If we're just breathing through the left nostril, everything's going to calm down. So the heart rate's going to lower. And everything, all the systems of the body are going to slowly calm down. So the hypothesis, or actually the theory at this time, is that your body is reflexively doing this, using your nostrils and the way in which you breathe as these sort of gas pedals and brake systems to alter and to coax yourself into different moods and to create a homeostasis within the body, which if you think about, is super weird, but it makes perfect sense. So if you're breathing through your mouth, you get none of those benefits at all.
This is so cool because, you know, when I started this podcast, I was looking for things people could do to increase their health and joy. Like breathing, all you have to do is change the way you breathe, and it does both, and it's free, and it's fast, and like you don't need to go anywhere. That's genius. I'm so excited for this book to come out and more people to read it. But one other thing I saw in there that I thought was so cool is humming. So humming can also help with breathing. How, why, what song do you hum in the shower?
Sure. Yeah, I've always wondered, you know, does humming make people happy or do happy people just hum? And I think it's more the former than the latter. What some researchers in Sweden discovered about a decade ago was that when we hum, we can release about 15 times more nitric oxide in the paranasal sinuses. So I already told you what nitric oxide can do. All those good things, that natural Viagra, you know, more oxygenation to the body puts everything into a much richer state of balance. So just humming for a few minutes a day can increase nitric oxide and also has a huge effect on vasodilation. So it will open up the capillaries and the arteries in your body much more robustly. Nitric oxide will. And you can just do this by humming. So if your nose is usually stuffy and filled, go walk around, annoy the hell out of your roommates or your partner or anyone else around you and just hum. Hum a song. Do it for 5-10 minutes. This is great for people with asthma as well. So they suggest that the kids should be doing this more. So that is the miracle of humming.
Yeah, what's your go-to hum song?
Any Scott Walker song, of course. I can hum along with that. The Carpenters are great. Very sad songs. So I've been listening to a lot of Wise Blood lately, very sad songs as well. So you can hum whatever you want. Maybe you don't want to hum, you know, Metallica or death metal. That might cause a little cardiovascular problems. But pick an easy song, pick some Lionel Richie, you know, hum along with that. And I think you'll feel different. You'll increase the circulation, you'll increase your oxygenation, you'll increase your joy. There you go, humming.
I love it. I've always wondered how singers, like, they never seem to be sick or have stuffy noses on tour. Maybe, who knows, maybe this could be one reason.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So one thing I thought that was so interesting as well is, well, speaking of the Viagra, maybe I read this wrong, but it seemed like, so your nose has similar tissue to your sex organs. Or something like that. But what I took away from this is that if you have an orgasm, your nose clears. No.
That would be great if that were the case. I guess, you know, we'll all just have to go experiment with that and see what happens. But the tissue that lines the nose is not similar, it's the exact same as the tissue that lines the genitals. So it is erectile tissue, which means it acts exactly the same. So when you get aroused, one area usually arouses the other. So some people are so sensitive to this that when they get aroused, their noses plug up so much that they can't breathe and they start sneezing. And it's common enough that it is called honeymoon rhinitis. It afflicts that many people. So, you know, what's interesting is sexual arousal is controlled by the parasympathetic system. And that's the system of relaxing, digesting, being calm. And so you can induce sexual arousal by breathing slowly, parasympathetically. Meanwhile, orgasms are a sympathetic response. Now, the sympathetic system, that's the fight or flight system, the aggro system. And that is, they're usually preceded by fast and short and sharp breathing. So there is very likely a connection between those two. Why you would want to breathe, or why you happen to breathe short and very sharp and quickly before said epiphany, orgasm, and why you would want to be breathing very softly at the beginning of your coupling with said mate. So the whole bunch of interactions here, but the summary of this is, yes, your nose is intimately connected to your genitals more than any other organ in the body.
That is so wild. With that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to talk about how breathing affects running, what methods you can do to affect performance, and so much more. Hey friends, one local San Diego company that's always given me joy is Kashi. Kashi is the largest non-GMO Project Verified and USDA organic cereal company. They make food people love, from peanut butter Kashi Go cereal, which has 10 grams of protein, to Kashi by Kids cereal, which is made with superfood ingredients. As a company, they believe food is not only a major unlock for positive health, but for positive lives and a healthy planet. Kashi's pioneered programs like Certified Transitional, which supports farmers making the transition from conventional farming to organic. They also support fair trade programs like Fair Trade Chocolate in their Kashi Go Chocolate cereal, which, by the way, is so tasty. Also, their bee policy, that's bzzz as in those kinds of bees, make sure our pollinators will be around not just today, but tomorrow as well. Kashi was founded in my hometown in San Diego in 1984. They do a ton of giving back locally. They even have an amazing garden in their corporate headquarters in San Diego, which employees can pick from to feed their families. You can find out more at Kashi.com. That's Kashi.com. But even running, my nose will open up more, better. Mm-hmm. I can breathe more clearly. And if I focus on just nose breathing when I run, it's a game changer, but it's hard. So a lot of our listeners are athletes, especially runners. Any advice on how to breathe better while performing, especially endurance activities like running or cycling?
Well, I realize I'm wading into the cult of running here, and I'm sure I will be reprimanded by said cult members. But what I have learned is from several pro Olympic runners who do this all the time is you always want to be inhaling through the nose. You are increasing your oxygenation. You're lowering your heart rate. You're able to do more and to push harder with less energy. That's the key to running. So always breathe through the nose. Whether or not you want to breathe through the mouth, that is much more controversial. When you're breathing entirely through the nose, you're inhaling and exhaling through the nose, you are conserving 40% more water. So if you're going on a really long run and you don't want to be one of those freaks, you know, with a belt with the 6 little water bottles around the belt, nobody wants to be that person, right? Then shut your mouth and you're going to conserve a lot more water that way. If anyone's in front of a computer right now, check out some pictures of Sanya Richards Ross, a devout nose breather and a complete badass sprinter. You will see her with her lips zipped, breathing through her nose and destroying all competition around her. So she did Buteyko breathing, but she learned the power of breathing and breathing less and breathing slowly and breathing through the nose. And she was the number one sprinter, woman sprinter for like 10 years. So you're going to see these habits among the elite of the elite, these very good breathing habits. For the other 99% of us, we need a lot of work. And that's what I discovered in the years of researching this, especially myself. You know, I was the worst offender.
Wait, so you said she did Buteyko breathing?
That's right.
Which, really good thing to look up, Buteyko. Who is he?
So Konstantin Buteyko. So when you look that up online, you're going to be entering into a very weirdo zone of a bunch of poorly designed websites and, you know, fluorescent fonts and flashing GIFs and all that. So be forewarned, because there's a lot of misinformation about him and his science. But to give you the short version, he was a Russian cardiologist, actually from the Ukraine, who had extreme hypertension. His blood pressure was 212. His systolic blood pressure, which is off the freaking charts. And he was told he was going to die in a year. But he slowly started changing his breathing, and he noticed his blood pressure and all the other problems associated with it immediately went down, like more than any pharmaceutical drug, more than anything else. So he started teaching asthmatics this slow and calm breathing through the nose, and found miraculously that he was able to essentially cure these people of asthma. He went on to teach athletes. He went on to work with apparently Prince Charles on his allergies. He went on to treat people with chronic hypertension, diabetes, like you name it. And he has there's a wealth of studies. The problem is almost all of it is in Russian. And so much of it we have learned from sources that are not entirely reliable. A good reliable source is Patrick McEwen, McEowen. He wrote a book called The Oxygen Advantage. If you look him up, this guy is rock solid, and everything that he's saying has been checked out and is scientifically proven. So he's a great translator of Buteyko's work. Also, Anders Olsen at Conscious Breathing is a huge slow and less breathing advocate who has done a bunch of his own science, really solid stuff. So stick with those guys. They know what they're talking about.
I love it. We're going to have Patrick on the podcast soon, so I'll have to ask him about Buteyko breathing.
Great dude. Yeah. You know, I went into breathing without any ulterior motive. I'm curious about what's best. So what I've found is in breathing, there's people who say slow and less. There's people who say, oh no, you got to blow it out and breathe more. What I've found is all of these ways of breathing have their benefits.
Totally.
So it's not one or the other. You have to look at all of them and use them all in certain ways for what you're going for. So I'm as big of an advocate for Tummo or Wim Hof or Pranayama or Kriya or whatever you want to call overbreathing, conscious overbreathing, as I am for slow breathing. Just depends on where you want to get to and what you want to do. So there's as many ways to breathe as there are foods to eat. So you got to pick the ones that are going to respond best to you and to your lifestyle.
Yeah. So real quick, if anybody's confused, we're talking a little bit about, it's also called super breathing, where you just breathe a lot constantly and you really oxygenate yourself, and you might do breath holds, whatever. There's lots of different ways of doing this. I've done a bunch and they just feel so good. And then there's also just breathing slowly, which seems to be the most overall, what you're saying, best for your health.
Sure. But I will, like, if we're talking about overbreathing, the super breathing, know that you are not getting more oxygen during those states of super breathing. You are getting less.
Interesting. This
seems so counterintuitive. You're like, what are you talking about? I'm consuming more air. You're not. You're just blowing off more of that air you've just breathed in. So we only take in about a quarter of the air that we breathe in with each breath. So if you're breathing slowly and you're breathing less, you're using more of that air. So you don't have to force your body to overwork to get that oxygen. When you are overbreathing and really going for it, what happens is your blood vessels start constricting. You get less oxygen. You get less blood flow, which is why your fingers start tingling and you get lightheaded. That's why. There are huge benefits to breathing this way, okay? Just to be clear, huge for immune system function, for autonomic nervous system control, all of that stuff. Huge benefits. But one of them is not oxygenation. The opposite is happening, which is why Hoff's method, which I like it so much, because what do? You breathe, you really go for it, and then guess what? You hold your breath. So at that time, you hold your breath, you are opening up all those capillaries, you are delivering all that oxygen and circulation when you hold your breath. If I were to go into a room right now and overbreathe for a half an hour, I'd be getting less oxygen. So just want to make that clear. It sounds so contradictory, and it took me years to really figure this out. I had to talk to scientists, researchers, and do my own self-experimentation, but it's 100% true.
Well, this is helpful because there's so many breath classes right now. They're booming, at least in Southern California where I live. I imagine in San Francisco, there's quite a bit where you live. And it's awesome. So I've done Wim Hof breathing. I've done something called transformational breathing where like a bunch of people cried. I didn't cry, but I started laughing. Maybe that was just my release. So which breath classes are good? What should we look for?
So something that I discovered in this, all of this research, talking to all these researchers and reading a zillion books on this stuff, is all of these breathing techniques that have been developed over the past thousands of years are all means to the same ends. So many of them do the exact same thing. So they put you in control back into your body. They calm the mind. They reset the body's functions, and they allow you to function normally afterwards. So, I'm not going to bag on one or really promote another, because what I've found, and I've done this in labs, I've looked at Kriya versus Wim Hof, and they're all doing the same thing. If you look at the studies between something like Kriya, and just to explain, Kriya is extremely similar to Wim Hof breathing, which is extremely similar to Tummo, which is extremely similar to Pranayama. It's breathing really, really fast and then breathing really, really slow. So the effects are the same on the body. So having said that, I really enjoy Sudarshan Kriya, which I learned through The Art of Living. It's a big organization. Tens of millions of people do this. Had a very wild and weird experience doing this Sudarshan Kriya breath work, and I thought, oh my God, what happened to me? No one could really answer that question, so I had to go answer it myself over years and years. So I do that for heavy breathing. Okay. Very brief, four sentences.
Cliff Notes version, how's that?
This is a very intense breathing practice that for 40 minutes, you're just going for it. So at the end of this session, I had sweated through my socks, through my jeans, through my shirt, through my sweater. My hair was sopping wet, even though the temperature in the room was in the 60s. And I felt great. It was like a balm went off in my body. So I went and asked, that doesn't sound like a good thing, a balm going off in your body, but it just go with me here. It felt great. So I asked doctors and researchers, I said, what the hell happened? Like, this is real. This happened to me. They said, oh, you had a fever. Oh, it must have been too hot in the room. Oh, you're wearing too many clothes. None of those answers make any sense. So that's what I spent so many years trying to figure out, is what really happens to the body when we place ourselves in these states of heightened conscious breathing, and how can we use these states to enrich our health and happiness and longevity? That's what the book is about.
It's so cool. So I remember I first contacted you about doing a book on breathing like 3 years ago, because I had taken a class with Dan Brulé, who teaches mostly in Cabo San Lucas. And it was a little bizarre because we just had to meet at a hotel room. That was just the best place. He was in town visiting. And he had Johnny and I lie on his bed, and we did a lot of breathing, maybe overbreathing. I don't know what you call it, hyperventilating. And then all of a sudden, my hands became claws. And then I just like stopped remembering what happened next, except for it felt so good. Like so good that I was almost embarrassed to be around other people. It felt that good. And I was like, this is so cool. The rest of the day, I felt like a new human, all from breathing. And the only other time I experienced this was when I read your first book, Deep, about freediving. And Johnny and I happened to be in Australia, and we took a freediving class with a freediving breath expert who actually had us go into the water on an exhale, not on an inhale. And it was just, I felt so good. By the way, you shouldn't try these breathing exercises in the water. You could die and drown. But you did write about freediving. So how has your relationship to breath and freediving changed since you've done this book and research?
Yeah. And I guess my awareness of breathing and the potential of breathing really did start with freediving. And I had written about freediving for Outside Magazine, God, like 7 years ago. And I met all these freedivers, competitive freedivers, who were diving to 300, 400 feet on a single breath. And they told me the only way to master freediving, the only way to hold your breath, is to really learn how to breathe. And by learning how to breathe, you can also open up all these other channels. You can help your body lose more weight. You can get rid of asthma. You can get rid of allergies. So all these crazy claims. But I believe them to a certain extent, at least enough to want to go research them on a more scientific level. So that, you know, when I saw the benefits of breathing from my own freediving, right? You have to expand your lungs. You have to really control that buildup of carbon dioxide and your feelings around it. And you have to really dial in to your inhalations and exhalations during this act. You're so connected to your breath when you're freediving. But I kept wondering, I was like, what are the other benefits of breathing this way on dry land for the rest of us who don't want to freedive? And so that was another inspiration I took, along with my own experiences, to really want to dive into this, it's a bad pun, unintentional, into this world of breathing for the rest of us, you know, not just for freediving, but for everybody else.
I love it. Well, you guys will all have to read not his first book, but maybe his second or third book he wrote called Deep, which I just love, and I give it to a lot of friends as a gift. It's such a good book. So this podcast is focused on joy and, you know, proper breath. Like we said, it's such a good vitamin. So what have you learned about breathing in joy?
I think it would be really hard to be joyful if you're not breathing properly. I know that sounds crazy, but from what I've learned, how we breathe, just as I had said before, is as important as what we're eating or how much we're sleeping or how much we're exercising. I really, truly believe that. And I've seen people utterly transformed by simply changing their breathing habits. That includes asthmatics. It includes scoliosis patients. It includes people with anxieties and depression and panic. So after having seen that and felt the power of this simple free thing that you can do anywhere at any time, I'm convinced that that is the first stepping stone. Anyone can do this. It doesn't really take much effort at all to just change the way you're breathing. And that 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out is a great place to start. Once you've mastered that, man, there's a whole other world of breathing practices, as I'm sure you know, Shelby. It sounds like you've been through the whole gamut of them, as have I. And it's a fascinating world to just feel your body react in different ways by doing nothing more than to sit still and change your respiration. And just realize how much potential there is in that simple act to live happier and to live longer.
Wow. I mean, thank you. I feel like it'd be so much easier to change the way you breathe versus your diet. Like, changing your diet's tough. Nobody likes to give up certain things. But change your breath, that's something that you can probably do while you're driving to work, while you're sitting in the office, while you're talking on the phone, while you're listening to this podcast. So speaking of, I'm really interested in laughter. And I'm curious if you have any research on how we breathe changes when we laugh.
I'm laughing now. Maybe that's apropos of this moment. That is something I have not researched, I'll be completely honest. And just to be clear with the whole food and exercise thing, listen, people, what you eat and how much you exercise is important. You can't cram down like 4 Burger King burgers and think I'm just going to breathe right and everything's going to be cool and then play video games the rest of your life. So all of these work together. What I'm trying to express, though, is that breathing is another one of those pillars along with exercise and food. And luckily, unlike exercise and food, as Shelby just said, you can do this anywhere at any time. So back to laughter. Well, you know, now that I think about it, when you're laughing, you're not inhaling, which means your CO2 is going up, which means your capillaries are opening, because CO2 is a massive vasodilator, which means you're getting more oxygen. So my, you know, thought experiment hypothesis is that maybe laughing feels so good because you're increasing your circulation. I think it has much more to do with hormones in the body, but from a breathing standpoint, that's just my riff. Don't take that one to the bank, people, but don't stop laughing either if you're worried, oh, I'm laughing through my mouth. This is a problem. I need to be breathing through my nose. Chill out, you know. If being healthy requires you to spend all day stressing out and being miserable, then it's not worth it. Laugh as much as you possibly can. Then the rest of the time, breathe through your nose slowly and less. You'll be just fine.
So we ask all of our guests this. What do you do that brings you a lot of joy? That's pretty easy to do.
I breathe right. I practice on my breathing. As cheesy and as lame and as cheap as that sounds, that's what I do. Especially times like now. I can't go to the beach. I can't do anything. I can't really walk around. So I sit here in my office and I set up little timers on my phone that remind me to switch my breathing to a more healthy way throughout the day. And to me, it's made an enormous difference in my life. And to other people, just as I had mentioned before, I've seen them really be transformed by just shifting these slight habits in breathing.
Oh, James, always such a pleasure to talk to you. Breathe slowly, breathe less, breathe through your nose. And the tape thing, I tested it. Hard to find any tape that doesn't kind of rip your lip off, but the one James recommended, or if you can get tape for sensitive skin and only tape it on the little middle part of your mouth so that you still have room to breathe through the sides if anything goes wrong. Well, it kind of works. I did it with a sinus infection for a few days. It wasn't easy and I only did it for a few hours at a time, but I definitely saw some benefits and saw my nose clear up. It's really interesting when you focus on just breathing through your nose. I've also recently tried only breathing through my nose when I run, and I'm seeing a bit of a difference. I've gone from 7:30 5K minute mile pace to 6:40 minute mile pace for a 5K, but I'm also just getting fitter, so there's that. Either way, I've enjoyed working on my breathing, focusing on it, especially slowing my breath down when stressed or anxious. If you're stressed or anxious, or you just want to restart your day or feel a little better, 5 in, 5 seconds out. Ideally through your nose. Thank you for listening to the premiere show of Vitamin Joy. To James Nestor, thank you so much for coming on. You can buy James's book and see his work at mrjamesnestor.com. And to all of you who listen, thank you so much. This podcast is brand spanking new, which means I want you to write a review on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, or wherever you're listening to this show. These reviews mean a lot. They help the show grow. They help it get recognized. It only takes a few minutes. You can even create a wacky name to write your review. Ideally, you'll write a nice one. And if you can, please tell a friend or 10 if you like this show. It really means a lot. I want this show to grow. You can find out more about what I do. Sign up to the newsletter to get the latest episodes, catch some of my other shows, and even sign up for a recent podcast course I created at shelbystanger.com. That's S-H-E-L-B-Y-S-T-A-N-G-E-R.com. This podcast is a labor of love. Who knew podcasts were so much work? I guess I did, because this is my third show I'm working on. But Vitamin Joy is produced by an entire team. It's co-produced by Starburn Audio, edited by Mackenzie Mizell, and hosted, scripted, and created by yours truly, Shelby Stanger. With that, I hope you all add a little more vitamin joy in your life and breathe a little more easily this week. I'm sending you all a lot of love and vitamin joy. Next week, we have on Meredith Arthur talking about how to get out of our own heads.